Travel presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with singer, guitarist, and band leader, James Hunter from the James Hunter Six. In our conversation, James tells us about his home in Brighton, UK, and what it's like to get around using the train. And he tells us about the formation of his band, the James Hunter Six. And James talks about the style of music, which is very mod 60s R&B. James describes his guitars, a Gibson Les Paul Special, a Gretsch 6120, and a Gretsch Electromatic Double Jet. And he discusses his amps, which are Vox AC30s. James discusses his musical education, learning from his brother, listening to doo-wop, Eddie Cochran, and Gene Vincent, playing in pubs and bars in his neighborhood. James tells us about how he caught the ear of Van Morrison and how they ended up collaborating, one of the songs appearing on James Hunter's new album, Off the Fence, which comes out in January. James talks about his tour schedule and the difficulties of getting a visa to travel back to the USA, where he used to tour regularly before COVID. To find out more about James, you can go to his website, jameshuntermusic.com. That's jameshuntermusic.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my buddy James.
How are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
What's your name, mate?
My name's James as well.
Oh, jolly good. That would be really confusing.
Well, it could be worse. There could be another one of us named James.
Yes, there are. You know, we'll see who turns up.
And where are you right now?
I'm in Brighton, in East Sussex in England.
Okay. All right. And where is that in relation to, like, London?
Oh, London, head south, okay. And you go for about 50, 60 miles, and when you get wet, stop.
And
so it's about an hour from London by train.
Okay, by train. And would you take the train to London? Is that how you would get there?
We do, sir, frequently, you know. I don't drive, that's the other thing. So, you know, and it's Brighton's nice and accessible. There's a lot of fast trains come here, and it doesn't take long. The fast train gets in 50 minutes, so, you know.
Your band, the James Hunter Six, how long has the band been together and been a band?
Well, it's taken different forms over the years, but...
Was there the James Hunter Four and the James Hunter Five?
Yeah. Yeah, stylistically, I've always said we were somewhere between the Dave Clark 5 and the John Barry 7. Oh, sorry, numerically. But we started in 1990. That's when the band first started. I'd never had a band with saxes before, and uh-huh. I started this lineup. And people have come and gone all the way through, you know, till now.
Yeah. And why aren't those horn players singing backups?
Oh, I did, a long time ago, I did try and get the horn players to do backups, but now we've got a bass player, the first person in the band other than me who's been able to sing.
Okay.
The bass player, Miles Weeks, he will chip in on the backing vocals with me, and it sort of adds another dimension. We've never had that before.
Well, I've heard, I've probably made you at least like 26 cents by listening to all your songs on YouTube and Spotify.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
And I love it. I love your music. Your music is fantastic. So it's, you know, I don't want to try to categorize it because that never works well. But
I don't mind.
It definitely has, you know, a 60s vibe
to
it.
I like to be pigeonholed if it's the right pigeonhole.
Yeah. But were you always drawn to that music? Was there ever a time when you were playing heavy metal or anything like that?
No, all straight to this stuff. I think I was into... music of a certain age, you know, a certain period.
Sure.
Just because there's a certain flavor and kind of directness about music from a certain period, you know.
Yeah.
And it was the kind of before the 60s it really kicked in, and that sort of kind of pleased with itself knowingness hadn't crept in yet.
Oh, yeah.
So it's still my imagined kind of demographic as a bunch of Teds and their girlfriends in a greasy spoon cafe, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of, and it's supposed to be coming out of the jukebox in a egg and chips place, you know.
Well, it's fantastic, whatever it is. So, were you playing guitar at an early age?
Well, 14. is when I first picked it up. Okay. My brother's best mate sold me his. It's like a cheese wire thing. It was, you know, it was like a cigar box practically. And it was, he sent it to me in 1976. He sold it to me for £2.
Wow.
I couldn't pass that up.
No, exactly. And so I see you with like a Les Paul Special these days. Is that your main guitar?
Yes, that's the, it's kind of become my sort of signature sound, really, that one. But I've been indulging myself with it's what I call my midlife crisis, is when I bought a 6120, because I'd always idolized Eddie Cochran, since me teenage years, and I always wanted that. But, and Gretsch just didn't really suit me as much as the Les Paul, but it was an indulgence, and I've really enjoyed playing it.
It's gorgeous. What other guitars are you playing besides those?
It's mostly between those two. It's mostly the Les Paul, and there's one that I haven't took on the road yet that we can't find a. They don't make a hard case for it, and it's a Gretsch. What is electric? Thank you, darling. Me and the wife both have one each. It's okay. Electromatic.
Oh yeah.
Double jet, and it's it's sort of with a little double cutaway, and looking thing.
Yeah, kind of like.
Well, I bought Jesse the foam green one because they were quite cheap actually. Uh-huh. And for a cheapish guitar, they sound fantastic.
Right on.
And they fit in your hand beautifully.
Sure. Walk me through. Were your parents musical, or how did you get hooked?
No, my brother was. He started learning before I did, the year before. And he just taught me the rudiments, the sort of chords. He taught me about two or three chords, G and C.
Uh-huh.
'Cause I like G because it looked really difficult. Because your wedding ring finger is like right the opposite end of the end of the fretboard.
Sure.
While your digit and your middle finger is down there, and it looks really hard to do, and it wasn't. So I felt like I was showing off with that one. But so he showed me a couple of things, and he went off on a completely different style to what I did. My brother does this, he plays in folk clubs in Derbyshire, near where he lives, and he can do all that finger picking stuff. If you know, I can only use this finger in that one.
Yeah,
but he's got all this going on there.
Are you playing with a pick?
He claims he can't improvise, so I've got one over on him.
Do you play with a pick?
Yeah, I do, but sometimes I don't. On recordings, just to be experimental and just to prove I could, I've played without one. We did an instrumental called Blisters, and I named it because I did it without the, you know. I thought it was quite appropriate, you know.
Oh yeah. And the music that you were drawn to when you were a kid, what were you listening to?
Well, I was sort of, I was kind of into the sort of the rock and roll stuff, the Gene Vincent and Eddie Cochran, and then the a lot of doo-wop stuff. So I did like the sort of early rock and roll gear, but I was much more into the black side of it, and I had a particular weakness for the vocal groups, and I kind of learned to sort the wheat from the chaff with those, because there were a lot of kind of under par ones.
Yeah.
And you know, the real cream are the sort of people like the Moonglows, who were the absolute template for low harmony. If you couldn't, you know, they were the litmus test as if you were any good, you know.
Sure. And were you Did you end up playing in clubs and stuff, coffee houses, or by yourself, or was it always a band?
Yes, I did. I did a couple of folk clubs. Like I had an act on my own, and I'd do everything was covers of old sort of rocking stuff, you know.
Sure.
And eventually, I formed a couple of trios, and these were local in Colchester, and we would do local pubs. There was one called the Oliver Twist. It used to be the Globe when I was a kid, you know. Okay. And it was a great pub for music. And it had a big round bar in the middle, and you know, people all around the pub could watch the band through the bar around it. It was kind of the right shape for it.
Sure.
But it was a beautiful venue, and it's been gone a few years now.
Yeah. How'd you come up with a band, Howlin' Wolf?
Oh, well, I was calling myself that because I thought it was a good pun, you know.
Yes.
You know, and I sent a tape to Ted Carroll of Ace Records in London. Uh-huh. They were at their reissue. They were a reissue company. And he put me in touch with a couple who were musicians, and they lived in Kentish Town near Camden. Mm-hmm. And this was Tony Hilton and Sophie Hunt, or Dot, as her nickname was. And they, he played double bass, and she played played guitar. Actually, she played a Gibson. I think she played a 335.
Okay.
And they were brilliant. And so I would go every weekend after I knocked off from work. I worked on a railway in Colchester.
Okay.
I'd pack my suitcase to get the train up the Liverpool Street, go through to Kentish Town on the tube, and stay with them the night. And we'd run through a whole, we'd teach ourselves a whole bunch of songs and then take them out to Camden Lock, which is a kind of big tourist area.
Yeah.
Camden Lock Market was a big tourist attraction.
Sure.
And I thought it was the most magical place I'd ever seen. It was like, I thought, yeah, this is the future, definitely.
and then
we got invited indoors. You know, we got a bit of a following and got invited indoors to play.
Yeah.
And stuff sort of kicked off from then.
And how did that turn into the James Hunter Six?
Well, I had the band... that band broke up after about 3 years, and then I started the other one in 1990, and we were still called Howlin' Wolf for about 2 years. And then I decided, well, let's get a name that's less jocular, you know. So I carved the middle part out of my real name, which is Neil James Huntsman, is my full name, and I just carved the middle out and called it James Hunter.
Oh, yeah, right on.
So I thought I'd go with that, yeah.
And did it immediately take off? Did you?
No, there was a little bit of a buzz because I'd changed bands, and it was like we didn't have any product out to sort of, you know, you couldn't really get the good gigs unless you had something out. But sure. I still managed to blag a few because I would make a tape. We were still getting invited onto radio shows, you know, like Paul Jones's blues shows on Radio 2.
Yeah.
And we'd go into BBC studio, and that would provide us a lot of cassette tapes to make decent demos.
Yeah.
And I'd send them around, and I'd get, like the Mean Fiddler used to book us every few weeks, and it was, so I still managed to sustain myself.
Yeah.
It took until about 96 when we actually got to put a record out, and this was on Ace Records again. Uh-huh. And this was called Believe What I Say, and that came out in 1996.
Okay.
So we had a little bit of a buzz about that, and then nothing really happened until about 10 years later. That's when the Americans picked up on me.
Yeah.
And People Gonna Talk happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And the new album, what's it called?
The new one is called Off the Fence.
Okay.
It's, I'm not very good at album titles. I just poached the title of one of the songs and used that. And
there you go. That's great.
Yeah.
How'd you get hooked up with Van Morrison?
Oh, that. We were doing a gig in Newport in South Wales in 89. And the bloke who... owned it was the King's Hotel in Newport, and the fella who both owned the hotel and was the promoter happened to mention he was a mate of Van Morrison's, and he was going to be dropping over to listen to us.
Oh wow!
So yeah, so I thought that's good, you know. And so afterwards, we sat, and you know, the manager got the kettle on, and we all sat around in the bar drinking tea and talking about music, basically, yeah. And you know, we kicked off quite well. We got on all right.
Very good. Very good. And he appears on the new album?
Any what?
He appears on the new album? You have him sing?
Yes, that's right. We got him to record with us. And that's the second time he's done that on one of ours. The album I mentioned before, Believe What I Say, that we made in 96.
Sure.
I persuaded him to do two songs on that. And these were covers. I think he'd done them before with them. I think they were two covers of Bobby Bland songs.
Okay. Yeah.
But this time I pitched in one of my own, and because by this time I was writing all my own stuff, and he really dug it, and he agreed to do it.
Yeah, right.
So we recorded our bit, and then we sent it to it, the file to him, and he put his vocal on.
Right on. That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he sounds great.
Yeah. How tall are you?
5'10".
5'10". So he comes up to right about below your chin.
Yeah, he's not mountainous, is he?
No.
He's a lot thinner than he used to be. He's lost a load of weight, you know. He's
that's good.
So yeah, he carries it well, but he's
and so I see you're touring in the UK, of course, and I'll bet you tour in Europe a lot. Do you come much to the States?
Yeah, we do. We've done. I mean, since 2006, when our management and record companies were all based in the States, that's where the bulk of me work has always been for the last 19 years. So, you know, we come over there pretty regularly because there's been a shutdown and everything. Yeah. There's like my visa waiver hasn't gone through, you know, so... It's a real waiting game for that. Normally, they just go, boom, yep, okay, come over.
Yeah, yeah.
And this time, it's a bit of a drag, really.
That's
so we're
a drag.
We're hoping normal service will be resumed.
Yes, exactly.
No you can call it normal.
when you're touring, what are you using for amps?
Vox AC30.
Okay, very heavy.
I mean, good enough for the Shadows and the Beatles. It's good enough for me.
How's your back feel?
Oh my God, they are heavy, aren't they?
Yes.
I thought they looked light. I don't know what it was about, because they look so sort of streamlined. I always thought they were, like the first amp I ever had was some, I think it was a Selma, and it was solid state, even though it looked like a thing.
Yeah.
And it weighed nothing. You could sling it on your back.
Sure,
but Vox is a murder, aren't they?
Yeah. Do you when you come to the States, do you rent an AC30 or do you bring one with you?
It's a bit difficult to get them on the plane.
Yeah.
Especially in the overhead.
Yeah.
You know, the bloke in front of me moaning because it fell on him. People are so moany, aren't they?
Do you use any pedals as well?
No, I've never used them. I did try once. I tried a pedal just so that I could go from rhythm to lead, and I just found it so confusing, and sometimes it didn't work. So I get around that. If I want to play quietly, I usually keep the volume up, but I just brush the strings with the finger.
Sure.
I've got the pick here.
Yeah.
And I'll be sometimes in rhythm, I'll be just brushing it lightly with this one, you know. And so I do cheat a little bit like that. I usually tell people that because I think it makes me sound clever, but it's because I can't get to grips with pedals.
and what about at home? Do you have an amp that you use to mess around with?
Yeah, I've got an AC30, but it's kind of a bit noisy. We did have a miniature Vox, like a practice amp, little battery thing, and it's beautiful sound. So I mostly mess about with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about acoustic guitars?
And I'm doing these demos. Yeah, I use that for when I'm doing demos of my own.
Yeah. What about acoustic guitars?
I've got one acoustic guitar, and that was... That was nice how I got that. It's a Yamaha, so it's relatively inexpensive, but it sounds really pretty, you know. So,
sure.
And they're really quality guitars for the price. And there's a nice story behind that. I was in a theatre production. I don't boast about it because it's not my type of this actual thing wasn't my type of thing. I was in this play about Buddy Holly that was, you know, it was in the West End, but there was a tour version of it, and I was in that briefly.
Uh-huh.
And I got sacked because the producer didn't like me.
Oh no.
and the guys in the cast, they clubbed together and bought me this Yamaha.
Oh wow.
actually, the bloke who instigated it, Stoney, his name was, I think he played Richie Valens in it, and he had a whip round, and they got me a guitar for a going away present.
Oh, man.
Really nice thing to do.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what's the coming year look for you? Is you're going to put out the record, or is it already out?
Yes. It's coming out in January, okay. So we're going to be touring on the back of that.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, and we've got some stuff now in just coming up in the UK and in Europe.
Uh-huh.
But we will be coming to the States on the back of this album.
Good.
And I'm looking forward to inflicting the rest of it, because I was quite quite proud of these songs. I wrote, as is usual for me, I wrote them under pressure because the time was running out, you know, and I only had a year to get them all done, you know,
in
a schedule. And I'll do nothing for about 2 years and then suddenly go, oh, I've got to write an album.
And are you doing the arrangements, the horn arrangements and everything?
Yeah.
Wow.
I sketch those out myself. And I can't read music, but I pick out what I want to hear on the guitar. And any instrument that you can hit two notes at once on gives you an advantage. If it was a keyboard, which I can't play. A guitar, it makes it easy generally to sort of sketch out the harmonies you want.
Sure. Yeah.
And I always find that sort of, I get better at it. And I as time goes on, I sort of, I get better at sketching them up at short notice as well.
Yeah.
Which is what I've been doing. Sometimes it's, we'd be recording. We've already sort of started recording it. And then I'll go, oh no, you do this and you do this.
Yeah.
So I've got a piece of that.
That's great. When you're playing around Europe and the UK, what's the cap? Like, what are your rooms? What do they look like? As far as the
hotel
people.
Rooms? Oh, you mean? Oh, filthy. No, the actual. I don't know in terms of how many people in that, but they're usually sort of. In the best scenario, they're usually dance halls. That's,
yeah.
My favorite thing. Yeah. I'm not as keen on the bits where everybody's seated, although you can get a good atmosphere going, you know, you can, because sometimes people will dance despite it being seated, but it's not my favorite. Ideally, I like both. So you got people, if people want to see, they're near the front, and then people at the back, they've got to be a bit of dancing room, ideally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Your music calls for it. I mean, it demands.
Yeah. Even the slower stuff has got a bit of a pulse. I've never been drawn to or been able to write that excruciatingly slow stuff. You know?
Yeah.
The limit to how slow I'd ever want to go. You know?
Well, it's fantastic. It's wonderful talking to you, James. I appreciate your time.
You too, James. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I look forward. I hope you make it. I'm near San Francisco. So hopefully if you make it out this way, we get to hang out. And I don't know if you drink, but maybe
great.
We could have a beer.
I love it out there. We look forward to seeing you.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, James.
Take care, James. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.